and said despite their best efforts, the community's voice was ignored.
It's the same. It's the same. I don't understand. I do not understand. We're trying to work with them, but they giving us the boot every time. And it... Whatever they sow, they gonna reap. That's all I have to say. They know what they doing, and they know it's wrong.
In Piccolo and 9 other schools, all the teacher staff and principals will be fired. The administration of the school will be handed over to the nonprofit group Academy of Urban School Leadership, or AUSL, which has close ties to the Chicago School Board. The board's decision means Marquette Public School teacher Angela Dillon will be out of a job in the fall. She says the Chicago public school system did not provide the resources for her students to succeed.
And what is really sad is that the board is going to promise AUSL $15 million to pump into Marquette next year, and they won't give us the money now. They're going to make us drown for 6 more months and not service our students who need social workers and teachers, who need security guards and resources and help for our students. It's not fair.
Since No Child Left Behind was passed in 2002, protests at school closings in large urban school districts like Chicago have grown. It is not just people directly affected by the cuts who have vocally opposed them. Erica Clark's children attend Jones and Northside, two successful schools in white middle-class neighborhoods that are not on the closed-down list. Clark said she spoke at the hearings to express solidarity with the low-income communities of color affected by the closings.
Clearly communities that don't have the clout and don't have the ear of the mayor or the ear of the board or of the head of the district, they've been completely ignored, completely shut out of any kind of conversation about how to improve their schools. But I think they know, just like the parents at my kids' schools know, that the best decision makers for kids are the parents and in the schools, the teachers and the people, the members of the community.
Civil rights and education advocates have vowed to fight Chicago Public Schools' decision. Civil rights leader Reverend Jesse Jackson says the policies of Chicago Public Schools have resulted in a two-tier education system, one that provides adequate resources for white students and another that does not provide enough support for students of color.
We want equal protection for all of our children. We want to end patterns of segregation. Northside, 160 schools that do not have a library. 140 are south of North Avenue. It's unfair. 25% black teachers, 50% target for layoff. It is not fair. There's not a fair distribution of resources and people and teachers. And they're closing schools without touching base with the people appropriately. There'll be protests until it changes.
The Chicago Teachers Union and local school council have filed a lawsuit challenging the closings. And a bill introduced in the Illinois state legislature would place a moratorium on the policy of closing schools. Jessel Noor, FSRN, Chicago.
The state of Vermont will continue to fight to shut down an aging nuclear plant that shares the same design with the ones in Fukushima that exploded and melted down in Japan. The Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Plant was scheduled to close in March when its 40-year-old state license expires. But a federal court ruled in January that the state had overstepped its authority when it blocked the plant's owner, Entergy Nuclear, from extending the lease. The Vermont Attorney General announced he would appeal the ruling, but legal experts say the case sets precedents beyond Vermont and even beyond nuclear power issues. In Montpelier, FSRN's Carl Etnayer has the story.
Judge says conspiracy!
Judge says conspiracy!
We say democracy!
We say democracy!
On a cold February afternoon, demonstrators gather outside the Vermont State House. They're here to support the state's effort to close down Vermont's only nuclear reactor, of the same model as the three that melted down last year at the Fukushima Daiichi facility in Japan. The weekly demonstrations follow a complicated history involving the legislature and the courts. State law requires Vermont Yankee to close when its license expires in March. Last month, however, federal judge Garvin Murtha ruled that the state laws were passed illegally. He decided Vermont was in violation of federal law because state legislators discussed safety while passing bills about nuclear power. Federal law says only the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has a power to regulate safety at nuclear plants. Over the weekend, State Attorney General William Sorrell sent the court a notice that he will appeal the decision. Speaking to Vermont Public Radio in January, Sorrell argued the text of the laws don't mention safety, and comments made by some legislators while drafting the laws are irrelevant.
There are only 16 possible legislators who were quoted here to then suggest you take the thinking on the part of this maximum of 16 and say that all of the legislature or a majority of both bodies of the legislature and the governor were motivated by this impermissible motives, that could have dramatic impact on legislative enactments and legislative discussion and debate.
Judge Murtha's ruling wasn't completely in favor of Entergy. The company had argued that federal law preempts all state regulation of nuclear power plants. Murtha rejected such a sweeping dismissal of state authority. But the judge's decision could have wider implications. Tony Klein is a Democratic state representative and has been a major player in all the legislative activity around Vermont Yankee since Entergy purchased the plant in 2002. According to Klein, who's now chair of the House Natural Resources and Energy Committee, the decision might inhibit legislators from thinking issues through as they craft law.
This has a real serious implication on legislators throughout the country because it's no longer judge us on what our final product is. It's you're going to be judged on every word you say along the way. So you're not going to be allowed, if this stands up, to develop a thought process. I find that absolutely frightening.
Entergy has generally not commented on the lawsuit and did not respond to a request for an interview. Safety has been on the minds of Vermont Yankee's critics. Part of the reactor's cooling tower collapsed from lack of maintenance, a fire broke out at a transformer at the plant, and the radioactive tritium leaked from the plant to the groundwater. But safety was not mentioned when senators debated the fate of the plant in 2010. They cited concerns about the size of the decommissioning fund, whether the plant's owners would take financial responsibility for mishaps, the plant's reliability, and their lack of trust in a corporation that had repeatedly assured the state that the plant contained no underground pipes, while the pipes were leaking substances into the groundwater. Outside the statehouse, Chris Williams, the Vermont organizer with the Citizens Awareness Network, described grounds for the appeal.
I sat in a trial for all 3 days, and after reading his decision, I'm just floored by how much of the state's case had no impact upon him whatsoever. And
with the Attorney General's decision to take the case to the Second District Court of Appeals, the struggle to close Vermont Yankee continues on multiple fronts. Two other federal lawsuits brought by environmental groups challenge the plant's NRC license. The state's utility commission may reopen its hearings on a state license extension. And pressure from popular movements will continue, said Williams, both in Montpelier and closer to Vermont Yankee's home outside Brattleboro.
There's going to be a legal rally in Brattleboro on March 31st. Okay. On the 21st, several groups are planning a retirement party here in the State House for Vermont Yankee and Entergy. And on the 22nd, there are plans for nonviolent direct action in and around Brattleboro.
Williams promised the demonstrators would be outside the State House every Wednesday until hell freezes over or that plant shuts down. Carl Etnayer, FSRN, Montpelier. Are you going up on Friday?
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kamp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Janine Etter and Shauna Ray. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, February 23, 2012. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, President Obama announces protections for online privacy, but consumer advocates say the voluntary plan doesn't go far enough. In Chicago, the school board votes to close 17 schools despite months of protests by parents, students, and teachers. and a federal court judge rules the Defense of Marriage Act is unconstitutional. We'll find out what the decision means for same-sex couples. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. Army intelligence analyst Bradley Manning was arraigned today in military court in Maryland. It's the first step in his court-martial. Manning was formally charged with 22 counts connected to his allegedly leaking classified material to WikiLeaks. He deferred his plea. Another hearing is scheduled for March. A Virginia Senate committee today advanced two controversial pieces of legislation. A so-called personhood bill would establish human life at the moment of conception. The second bill would require an abdominal ultrasound for women seeking abortion services. Republicans backtracked on legislation that originally called for invasive transvaginal ultrasounds. But still, pro-choice groups are saying mandating any ultrasound is a violation of women's rights. In Colorado today, new campaign finance rules and the Republican state official who proposed them are drawing criticism. For FSRN, Maeve Conran reports.
Colorado Secretary of State Scott Gessler announced a completely new set of campaign finance rules on Wednesday. Changes include limiting the fine for late or incomplete campaign finance reports, as well as a change in the limits on campaign donations. This benefits tax-exempt political groups, commonly referred to as 527s. Under the proposed change, 527s only have to limit the amount of money they accept from an individual if the group expressly advocates for a particular candidate. That new rule echoes a Colorado Supreme Court decision from earlier this week, saying the groups are only advocating if they use words such as vote for or elect in their advertisements. Gessler and his supporters say the rule protects free speech, but critics say it will allow big money to dominate elections. A legal challenge is expected. Maeve Conran, FSRN, Boulder.
A report released today by the West Virginia Office of Minors Health, Safety, and Training says in the investigation following the Upper Big Branch mine disaster, state regulators have issued 253 violations. 29 miners died in the explosion and subsequent cave-in. Most of the violations dealt with the electrical systems, although several pointed to deficiencies with ventilation and the two foremen in charge, who the report says repeatedly fell short on their safety duties. A group of current and former UC Davis students are suing the school for civil rights violations after they were indiscriminately pepper sprayed by campus security last November. Now iconic footage of the protest shows a group of students peacefully sitting together in a line while a campus security guard walks down the row spraying their faces at close range. Students were protesting tuition increases. The federal suit filed by 19 students yesterday names the UC Davis chancellor, other university officials, and campus police officers. The ACLU, which is representing the students, says campus police were not trained properly. A bomb blast today in a Pakistani bus station in Peshawar killed 16 people and left more than 50 injured. FSRN's Shauna Ray reads for Gabe Matthews in Pakistan.
24-year-old Razi Khan was among the injured in the blast. He says that civilians were the targets of the bomb.
I heard a big, huge sound, and soon after I heard women, children, and young people crying. I found blood, flesh, and bones of human bodies all around me. I am injured too, but I forget my own pain and injuries when I remembered the crying of women and children. I am sure most of the dead and injured are innocent people.
The injured were taken to nearby hospitals. Police officials blame local militants for the attack. They say it was in retaliation for military operations currently underway in nearby tribal areas of the Khyber Agency. I'm Shauna Ray, reading for Gabe Matthews in Pakistan.
Canadian community radio stations, led by Montreal's CKUT, wrapped up their 10th annual homelessness marathon this morning. The event is a 14-hour live broadcast on housing, homelessness, and poverty issues. FSRN's Lillian Bachter was at the Native Friendship Center in Montreal, where the marathon broadcast was taking place.
Canada has no housing guarantee, even though it is one of the coldest countries in the world. The government has not seriously invested in social housing in more than a decade. Gretchen King, co-founder of the Canadian Homelessness Marathon, says the government must play a larger role.
Cities really need to own up to producing social housing. There's so much that they do to guarantee space for developers to come in and put in condos. What efforts are they putting in to ensure that social housing is going up with those condos?
Andy Edwards is another co-founder of the marathon. He and his kids were living in a Montreal political squad in 2001, which sparked the idea of the marathon.
I just would like people to treat us in a respectful manner. You know, it's hard to live on the streets and it's very depressing, but we try to make best to survive.
This year's U.S. Homelessness Marathon has been moved back to October, when organizers hope it can better influence the coming elections. Lillian Bachter, FSRN, Montreal.
And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's the twice-weekly Bathroom Spears Broadsides with lots of older tapes, a little bit of breaking news, not a lot, and an invitation for people to check out the Free Bradley Manning protest down at the county building, actually in front of the court building on Ocean Street. Those two buildings sometimes tend to merge together in my mind. Anyway, stay tuned, and you are tuned, of course, to 101.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, also freakradio.org, as long as we continue to pay the exorbitant fees we'll see what we're going to do on that stream. That's always a problem for us, which Uncle Dennis has talked to you about. He's the fellow who runs the next show, which is From the Cream to the Dregs, starting at 8 o'clock. We'll see how that goes, and you'll see how this show goes. Stay tuned.
Second time around, with your feet up in the air and your head down in the ground. Loving you, girl, is all I'm here to do. But I can't do that with all of these views, 'cause you make me feel. Like I second time around. With your feet up in the air and your head down in the ground.
And that was a couple of, well, that was our opening number by street musician who, well, it's a group actually called TFY, and they're actually out there, but I'm not quite sure who they are or what the name of that song is, but you just heard it here on Free Radio. We have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hello. Hello there. How are you?
I'm good. What's your name?
My name is Richard D. Martin.
And Richard, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Valero right now. I was exited from the homeless shelter service because I wouldn't give a man a cigarette. And conflict ensued. I pushed the man away from me, and I was exited for 7 days. I'm now denied services of food, clothing, and taking a shower now for 7 days.
And this is in Vallejo or in Santa Cruz you were exited?
No, actually, it was at the homeless shelter services, sir.
The homeless lack of services center here in Santa Cruz?
Yes, sir. Affirmative.
Uh-huh. And who gave the order that you be banned for a week?
Okay, the security officer who is ill-trained and only has been there for less than a month, who has interacted with the other people.
This was at the homeless service center or at the armory? Where was it?
No, it was at the homeless shelter itself. The armory, I could tell you some horror stories there, too, but let's just stick to what happened today. I was a volunteer there for security for 4 years, and I've never seen the atrocities that have been occurring there since in the last 2 years. Today was a fine example. I was supposed to only be exited for 24 hours, but they decided that 7 days was more appropriate. The officer that came in that had contact with me was not only belligerent, but he was prejudicial, and he wasn't a very nice guy.
What was his name, do you know?
Molly, I do believe, or Molly, or he's a cadet, I believe.
This was an armed police officer of the Santa Cruz Police?
Yes, sir. He was representing the Santa Cruz PD as a representative wearing the shield and badge in blue.
Uh-huh.
And his demeanor and his professionalism was at a ridiculous low. He kept asking me questions and then telling me to shut up. I couldn't even answer his question. He also threatened me with putting me in jail, and he also kept insinuating that I was smoking marijuana. I agreed to take a pee test right there. At that moment, it explained to him that I did not induce marijuana into my system.
And what time of day was this, Richard?
Well, you know, it was a nice day there.
What time of day?
It was about 3 o'clock, sir.
So this was about 3 hours ago?
Yes, sir, but you weren't on the air at that time. I did talk to your affiliate, the man predecessor.
Yeah, now now you're in Vallejo. You've traveled far in 3 hours.
No, sir. I'm at Valero, the gas station that's over on
Valero. I'm sorry. Whoops. All right, so you're outside tonight. You had previously been, a part of the Pauley Loft program or the Armory program or what?
I've been a part of every type of program that they had, the River, the Pauley Loft. I've never done the Page Smith, but I've participated at the Armory, or as I would like to say, Auschwitz, quite a few times. And the first time I was there, I was exited because I talked to a girl that was my lovely wife on the women's side. The man would not let me even engage in conversation with him. And I was exited and told to leave the armory most expeditiously.
So let me understand this. How long ago was this incident, you know?
It wasn't even a month ago. That was 3 weeks ago.
And you were trying to talk to your wife, who was also in the armory, and this guy wouldn't let you talk to her?
Yeah, affirmative. I didn't care for the demeanor. I explained to him company policy about having to be able to talk to people and interact in a non-confrontational manner. He thus got really angry, and the top of his head literally blew off, and he yelled at me to leave quickly.
Now, how many times in the previous week or month had you used the armory? Were you using it regularly, or this was your first time, or...?
This is my first time. Now, I also trained the other people that last year the armory was facilitated by a lady that was named Lee, And I trained that lady and the security personnel that were there. And this man gave me no professional courtesy whatsoever. His name is Hernan, I do believe.
And so this is you were told to leave. What about your wife? Was that your wife you're talking about, who you're trying to talk to?
Yes, I was trying. I converse with a lot of women there because I'm very, very popular there on the lot.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't appreciate that. The lady security officer said, "We don't debate about this issue." I was asking another personnel when they enacted this specific type of policy, and he informed me, and the other lady talked in a very less than human fashion towards me. And I then went to Hernan, who is the facilitator of the armory.
What's the name of this? What's that person's name again?
Yeah, Hernan is his name, Hernan.
Okay, and he's hired by the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or he's hired by the armory, or what?
Yes, sir, affirmative. With no training, no background skills whatsoever. Their social skills are nowhere near. It's an atrocity to the people.
Well, you know, I've been hearing increasingly a number of, should we say, horror stories about discrimination at the Armory and at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which is what I call the Homeless Services Center.
Yes, sir.
Because it seems to be providing less and less services and higher human cost, anyway, in terms of control and yes, sir,
yes,
no, sir,
sir,
three bags full, sir, and all that.
Yes, sir.
How long? You've been houseless in Santa Cruz for quite a while?
Yes, sir. I've been here for 10 years. I'm originally from Los Gatos, California.
Uh-huh. And what was there a change in policy after Letitia Schwartz and Monica Martinez took over after Doug Loiselle or not?
Yes, sir. There was a lot of things that were changed. I don't understand why they shut down the open campus policy, which I don't even understand how they can call it a campus. It's not a college, okay? And, yes. I can tell you quite a few things that are just out of this world. 3 weeks of no hot water for the people, okay? So we all had to take cold showers for the last 3 weeks. This just happened in the last week, but we received hot water again. Now, mind you, the money was there, but we had to purchase used water heaters and wait for them to be brought over for 3 weeks.
Well, maybe they just didn't want you to get into hot water.
Basically.
Yes. Have you been employed by the Homeless Lack of Services Center in the past? And maybe they paid you a wage to do anything, or were you a volunteer?
I was a volunteer. I was paid. It's inconsequential to me. I use their services very regularly. That place is my sanctuary. But I can visually, from the inside looking out, tell you different things that are happening, very explicit and right down to the detail of what's happening as the people are trying from the graves, dying because of the lack of services that are available to them because of what is going on there. I mean,
when you talk, by the way, Richard, talk a little bit away from your phone. You're distorting slightly.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
No, that's all right. No, just you can either talk more quietly or just move your face slightly away from the phone as you speak.
Okay, I'm using Bluetooth, sir.
That's okay. Say that again?
I'm using a Bluetooth as we speak.
Oh, I see. It's a little blurry, but I think we can still hear you.
Okay.
So you were going to tell us some of the other concerns you have, which are or are not shared by other people.
Well, there's been 3 different firings of people in positions that were actually helping the people, and now they're placing, like, the security guy who's never been trained by anybody that's officially worked with the people, nor does he have the social skills to be able to be a security person. And, I don't know. There are some things that happen, the stuff that's going on with the promotions of different things to get money. I haven't seen a dime of the $1 million that we had for Paige Smith yet in work. So they're not even tearing down those things? Those buildings that Paige Smith was erected upon, which Paul Lee helped finance, and Dave Smith also helped finance it. They've already paid for themselves a long time ago. Why they need the $1 million, it kind of makes me kind of wonder where the money is going.
So clarify this. I had heard, I think, now that I remember, that they intended to renovate Page Smith by tearing down all the modular structures and erecting something else in their place?
Yes, affirmative. That is what they're doing. They wanted to pull out the modulars and pull a few of them. Now, $1 million doesn't go very far for a modular home, you know. But I haven't seen any of this stuff happen. It's ridiculous. It's like a third world country back there on Page Smith.
Let me ask you about some other questions, though. I think these are very important issues, and I would encourage you to come to a HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which meets every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific, in case you know, are interested.
Yes, it's on your card, sir.
No, good.
We talked before when you were in front of the shelter, and you did an interview with me, and I spoke upon the 15 poor souls that had fallen before February of last year.
Huh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the specific interview, but I believe you, but now that you've had some more experience, that I should say is motivating you to, sounds like at least to call in tonight and maybe to try to do something. I know that, I've heard stories more recently and interviewed people. I may even be playing them tonight or have played them in the past few shows about people have been forced to leave the armory kind of on a whimsical, control freakish type demand of the person in charge.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if his name was Hernan.
Hernan, that's his name. Yes, sir. Affirmative.
Yeah. So it's a matter of concern. The question is, I guess what you want to do is get together and get the stories of other people and get them to come together to, make a united concern. In solidarity, there's more strength. In numbers, there's more strength, that sort of thing, you know.
Yes, I agree 100%. Okay, sir, I have to get off the phone. Me and my wife have to leave right now. Thank you very much for the interview, and God bless.
Before you go, Richard, one last thing.
Yes, sir.
There is a homeless class, you may or may not know, every Wednesday that Mayor Don Lane is throwing.
Oh,
great. Yeah, it's open to the public. It's open to you. It's 7:30 every Wednesday night at the Civic Auditorium across, kitty corner from the library.
Right.
And they're having, there's a bunch of students from the university coming out. I'd encourage you to go and tell your story to the folks there, either informally or just stand up and do it.
Yes, sir, I sure will.
Also, Don Lane, the mayor, supposedly is a big homeless fan, ha ha ha.
Yes, I kept cash with him out on the train tracks a while back for the homeless shelter. I've seen him in various places. I'm very aware of the man, yes.
Make an appointment with him and see what he says, but don't expect much from him, and then we'll broadcast your concerns. I'm actually meeting with him tomorrow. And I can, I can pass this on. He generally doesn't pay much attention to what I say, but he might pay attention to a bunch of homeless people setting up tents on the lawn of City Hall.
Yes, sir.
Or
yes,
just
sir.
Standing there, for that matter, with signs. I don't know.
I can very well speak, and I carry myself very, very, very efficiently, sir.
Thank you, Richard, and get back in touch with me when you got more time.
Yes, sir. I sure will.
All right.
Bye-bye. Have a good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And, hey, that was an unsolicited call from apparently Richard T. Martin, if I have his name correct, who says he was ousted from the armory without cause in an abusive manner, and that he was concerned about how staff are trained there, how he was treated, and how the Homeless Lack of Services Center is treating people as well. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, www.freakradio.org. Phone number here is, of course, for those of you regulars, you already know. But those of you who don't, it's 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. So, I actually visited the Bradley Manning protest. Manning, of course, for those who don't know, is an Army guy, I believe he's an Army guy, I don't think he's a Marine, but he's in the military, surely, who is accused of leaking a lot of embarrassing stuff to a group called WikiLeaks, which probably many people have heard about, which has broadcast that stuff or released it to other media, to the chagrin of Führer Obama, the Department of War, which some call the Department of Defense, the leaders throughout the world who get embarrassed by when their dirty underwear is aired. And he is he has been held for a long time. He was held in solitary. Now he's being simply held, still in somewhat restrictive circumstances. He has been charged, and he hasn't yet pled, I believe, in the arraignment. He was arraigned again today, and there were protests in front of the court building today, and they may still be going on, urging that Bradley Manning be freed. And, of course, I would suggest they jail the clowns who are jailing him, because they're the ones who have led the country into this these devastating recent wars that are bankrupting the country, murdering people abroad, and turning American military into murderers, which is what I unfortunately have to say when people start talking about how our heroic veterans are defending the country. One has to say, no, they're a bunch of dupes at best. I'm sorry, they're not heroic veterans. They are perhaps brainwashed veterans, but they sure as hell aren't heroic. And that doesn't mean they shouldn't be taken care of, and everybody shouldn't have a decent kind of piece of the pie that now is being hogged and monopolized further and further by the 1% over the 99%. However, it does mean that you don't want to glorify, glamorize, or mislead the reality of what the U.S. military is doing overseas. And to some extent in this country, too, since we lost the restrictions on the military passed two centuries ago, or a century and a half ago, so-called Posse Comitatus Act, which forbade, for good or bad, the military from use in domestic situations generally, trying to distinguish between police action, which is bad enough, and military action, where you're out there to kill the enemy. And, you know, suddenly the people are the enemy. You know, it's, we've seen this kind of confrontation in other countries. Egypt, Tunisia, Syria, Libya, you know, Bahrain, Yemen, you name it. Often with U.S. supporting the bad guys, or trying to intervene opportunistically on the side of one of the groups that's rebelling in order to get more political advantage. So, well, I had hoped to play a recording of the Homeless Lack of Services Center's, well, it's actually Don Lane, Mayor Don Lane's class, which is being held every Wednesday night, as I was telling our last caller, at the Tony Hill Room of the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium across from City Hall and kitty corner from the library at, I guess it's Center and Church Streets, which every Wednesday night at 7:30 there's been a class for the last few weeks. This most recent class last night was Steve Plaich versus Eric Smirking Seeley, as I call him, the homeless lack of services officer who I've been a relatively persistent critic of. Some people have positive things to say about Officer, now I think he's Sergeant Seeley, but I have unfortunately not really reached that point, at least that's not what comes up when I hear his name. And I understand he didn't do too good a job in defending his... They're both talking about what's called homelessness and the law last night. Now, I wasn't there, and I'd hoped to record it, but unfortunately, Steve Plaich forgot to turn on the tape recorder. Bad Steve Plaich. However, there were some people in the audience who may have heard it. I think Becky Johnson, one of the Santa Cruz 11 defendants, accused of felonies and misdemeanors, essentially for reporting on... I'm not sure why they're accusing her of anything whatsoever. She wasn't, by her own account, even in the building at all. And the building itself, of course, many of us have been in vacant buildings in the past, to dramatize the fact that there are buildings held vacant all over this country while there are millions of people who are homeless and cold and freezing and ill, and the banks are foreclosing on the homes of even people who you might say never thought they'd get into that situation at all. And these kind of protests in the past, we've been arrested for misdemeanor protest, for trespass. And the charges have usually been dropped because it's been clear that these kinds of protests are done with a civic purpose, having to do with alerting the community to unmet needs, alerting the community to corrupt practices, alerting the community to abusive behavior by banks. Well, in the past, I haven't been so much involved in activities that expose bank behavior, but in activities that simply expose the predatory behavior of landlords, property owners, city officials, government agencies that facilitate this kind of thing, keeping property locked, vacant, and deteriorating while other people outside are freezing and cold and lack services and are being pursued by the police for being outside. I mean, it's just a really topsy-turvy, upside-down situation. But in Santa Cruz, because the police department has been, should we say, embarrassed at the fact that there was pretty strong support for the occupation of the 75 River Street property, at least in the crowd of people who showed up there on those nights when it was occupied initially. The first night it was occupied, I was there reporting on it for free radio and for other blogs that I write for. I think the police department felt it needed to back down and not engage in violent behavior, which I think was a wise decision on the part of Chief Vogel and perhaps Deputy Chief Steve Clark. I don't know who actually made the decision, but it was a wise decision. And it was also a rather common sense decision. There were 100 people who were very angry at the police for showing up at and in massive riot squad gear and so forth. But in the days that followed, when they made no arrests for any kind of trespasser, told anyone they had to leave and then arrested people who didn't leave, if that really was their objective, was securing this vacant property that is still now surrounded by mesh fences. I guess I don't know if they're mesh fences or they're metal fences. It's still not being used. It's still being held in a privately owned bank. And apparently the leased rent that's being asked by Wells Fargo Bank, which I'm told is the property owner, is at, what, $28,000 a month? Something that you're unlikely to find, I'm told you're unlikely to find any kind of tenant for. Instead of, you know, letting this one go and acknowledging, yes, this is an embarrassment, but at least we've made aware of it, even commending the people who brought these issues to the attention of the city, as occupiers throughout the country have done on various issues, specifically around financial abuses, we have the police trying to criminalize and demonize the activists who are involved, and also the activists who are peripherally reporting on these issues, or who were supportive of the idea of occupying vacant space, or even supportive of the actual occupation itself, in the sense that they said that this is something that the community needs to take some notice of, that they need to create real shelter, that they need to respond. And, of course, the response of the police was to make another 100 to 200 people homeless by destroying the campground that was set up across the river and had been a part of Occupy Santa Cruz, and then destroying the First Amendment rights of Occupy Santa Cruz itself by establishing a curfew around the courthouse and the county building and arresting people who would hold a sign up after 7 o'clock at night there. There is a reoccupation happening in front of the courthouse now, which I guess Anthony, almost a lone protester, though he does have some support from some Occupy Santa Cruz folks, is doing, and I believe we're going to play some of his interviews tonight. But first, I think I'm going to go back a bit and play a few older interviews, kind of to catch up. And I may be duplicating myself at some point. If so, I apologize. But again, let's hear what we got here, and maybe hear what you've got, because again, 427-3772. The call-in number to this show is 427-FRSC. We are indeed Freak Radio Santa Cruz. And I will also try to keep an eye on the Internet, see if any email is coming in, and I will answer that. There have also been a couple things that have happened this week. I was arraigned I went to court along with three other people as another group of the sacrificial lambs, victims that the police department is going after and the DA now is going after. When I show the charges to attorneys, they're kind of baffled. They do not understand how the DA thinks he can actually win in court on these charges. But, of course, it's very expensive and time-consuming and frightening to defend against felonies. I've never done that before myself. Never thought I would have to. Not realizing the extent of the repression in Santa Cruz or how far the police department's willing to go to pretty up and powder up its crooked face here, we have a phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert, quit whining. Everybody knows you were in the building. They've got pictures. Why fight it?
Well, you know.
And you know, some city council members were there, too. Have they been indicted yet?
Well, I'm hoping that Catherine and I will surrender together. That's council member Catherine Byers.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to meet with her tomorrow and try to persuade her to surrender.
Oh, okay.
I'm not quite sure. She's maybe at an undisclosed location, however.
Yeah, being... staying undercover.
Undercover, we don't want to discuss the cover situation, really, in any detail. But I am, in fact...
I did want to let our listeners know that... if they're listening to us on the stream, they should definitely bookmark the stream address.
And what does that mean, and why so?
Well, if you're listening on a program like Winamp, there's a place to enter a bookmark for our stream, and you should definitely do it and make sure you've got that saved, because in the very near future, we're unfortunately going to have to take those links off our webpage.
Okay.
Well, the only way you're going to get the stream is to have those links already.
And you want to? I guess the links are currently on the page, so people can go.
They'll be there for till the end of the week, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, in other words, you're confessing your criminal intentions on the air, Uncle Dennis?
I have no criminal intentions. I am just letting our listeners know about an upcoming situation that they may be interested in.
I see. Isn't it a fact, Uncle Dennis, that you are, shall we say, playing copyrighted music every night, violating the rights of the artists, not to mention the middlemen who are making money off the artists?
Well, that's a matter of interpretation.
Mm. And were you in the building as well, Uncle Dennis?
Let's absolutely come. Not. No one ever saw me there.
Yeah, sure. They all say that, Uncle Dennis.
I deny any knowledge of anything associated with any knowledge.
Was there an 18-minute gap in that tape? That's a good question, yeah.
Yes, and by the way, I take the 5th.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, maybe you should go to the jury room and have it.
And the 14th.
Yes. Those are rapidly deteriorating and disappearing.
Yeah, we have very little left. Yeah, hang on to the Second Amendment. You might need that one.
Indeed, with your bare hands and that sort of thing. All right, well, so...
Anyway,
do remind listeners
to bookmark the streaming website.
Well, is the station going to continue? Because I understand you need money to continue running Free Radio. Isn't that true?
Well, that's a different issue. We need money. We're running out of money. I've got to pay the rent for March here in the next day or two. And we will be very close to having no money.
Hmm.
So it's going to be touch and go whether we're still on the air.
Well, perhaps you could do some singing.
At our 17th birthday.
Uh-huh. 17 and away you go. Away we go, I should say.
We will have been on the air for 17 years as of March 30th. So
you're naturally planning a benefit at which you're going to be sharing the profits with the Santa Cruz.
I thought you were planning the benefit, Robert.
Well, I will hopefully benefit from the benefit as
a
member.
The sheriff will open up the jail.
That would be nice.
You can come have the party in your cell.
That's something I prefer not to even think about.
Well, Robert, I mean... If you can't do the time, don't do the crime.
Well, I never knew it was a crime, Uncle Dennis.
Is your name on the deed or the rental agreement for that building?
You know, this is an interesting question. Of course, the facts are going to come out in court. But walking into a building with a city council member and hundreds of other people that are coming in and out of a building where the police are standing nearby and doing absolutely nothing is... not necessarily something one would expect to be even...
Robert, you know that ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Well, ignorance, that's what I tell the police, but they keep, ignorance, of course, is really what's... I think it's more prejudice than ignorance.
You must have known, you don't have to answer this question, but you must have known that, you know, that building had been locked up for 3 years, and it certainly wasn't open by anybody who had any... any control or authority to do so.
I actually didn't know any of that one way or the other.
And, oh, I'm glad.
And I think that other people who didn't have that idea either. Some I'm sure did because
I'm pretty sure that you didn't open the door.
There
right?
was some evidence later. I didn't do it with my little hatchet. No, I had.
Okay. Well,
and in fact, if I had,
we'll see you in about
20 years.
An hour and 20.
Mm-hmm. All right, Uncle Dennis, we'll see you at your show.
Make sure all our listeners know to bookmark our streaming site.
Indeed, and I'm glad to see you've joined
the streaming links.
And I'm glad to see you've joined the prosecution team, Uncle Dennis.
No, I'm just, as a citizen of Santa Cruz, just pointing out the obvious, Robert.
Mm. All right, then. Well, thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. And to me, the really obvious thing is what's not being discussed, which has to do with the issues I was talking about before, the fact that there's all kinds of vacant buildings around that are lying unused, and that when these get either symbolically or actually occupied, this becomes the basis of a major finger-pointing, kind of screaming, criminalizing focus, instead of the realities that are lying behind this, which I think, frankly, are far more important. And that's what I think about it. What do you think? 427-3772. I'm going to drop back into some of the tapes, but, of course, we can talk about issues of, whatever. There's actually a couple of things happening tonight that I think you need to be aware of, because there is, I've mentioned the Bradley Manning protest. There's actually a protest coming up tomorrow, or not so much protests as events, and I want to make sure I have them properly described. In order to do that, I want to do a little quick checking, and while I'm doing that, let's hear some interviews from older times.
You have a guitar on your back. Have you been playing much today?
Briefly, yes.
And what kind of music do you play?
It's just a blend of many types. How's that?
All right. And have you been doing it long down here on Pacific Avenue?
Occasionally.
And are you treated with the respect which a musician is entitled?
Well, normally I am, yes.
And do the police officers come up and commend you on your good music?
No, but I've only been, questioned once. A long time ago. I'm not...
Did you pass muster with the questioner?
Well, I made myself clear that I was, entitled to be there, and I'm not breaking any law by doing so.
And did the police officer respect your point of view?
He did, actually. He realized that I was not, typically,
scum and riffraff that usually hang out with phony guitars trying to molest children and steal bread and that sort of thing.
It's a theater.
Yeah, I guess so. So, do you want to play some music at some point? Particularly, I'm interested in political music.
There's been a competition today. I think I'll let the other people have Christmas Eve.
Ho, ho, ho. Yes, and we've been talking with
Carl.
Thanks, Carl. So, very close to the Free Radio Santa Cruz fundraising table, we have
Wayne Van Hoon Capatier.
And Wayne, is it?
Yeah.
And Wayne, I'm Robert. I see a sign here. I got to watch my machine. It says, it's a rather lengthy sign. It says, I need the help of some kind souls to help me along the way so I can get home to be with my family and friends someday. Stranded in Santa Cruz, so far away from my home, I am Mariposa. That is your name, Mariposa? Or that's where you live?
Mariposa.
Mariposa is Arizona, no?
No, it's up there by Yosemite.
Oh, okay. So, what brings you to this neck of the country?
Some friends brought me down here for the Christmas vacation and decided to go someplace else. Left me standing on the corner. Never been to Santa Cruz before, so I got to go home.
Now, of course, it's the day before Christmas, and we think the most opportune time for getting some kind of donations. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm almost there. I'm about two-thirds of the way.
And how much do you need to make?
Well, according to them, it's almost $100.
And so you made $66 in how long? How many hours have you been here?
I've been here yesterday. I was here from 1 till 3. And today from 7 o'clock in the morning.
Pretty cold this morning at 7 o'clock.
It was a lot chilly.
And where did you sleep last night? Illegally, I might add.
Around in a bush.
Were you hassled by the gendarmes?
Nope.
Or just well hidden?
Just well hidden.
Have you been here long?
4 days.
And how have you been treated on your 4 days here?
All right. No problems so far. I've had no fights. I've had no problems. Nobody's even given me a bad time.
Any free food services provided?
Yeah, I've been over to the... Where they go up to the armory over here on...
Homeless service center?
Yeah.
Homeless lack of services center?
To eat dinner at night and sometimes in the morning if I get up early.
How is the food?
It's good. It's excellent.
Okay. How are the people treating you?
Over there? Fine. They told me I can come stay tonight there if I want, but I don't know. I was in the military, okay, and I became a POW, and I don't really like confined places.
Where were you a POW?
I don't know. It was someplace over in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. So, how old are you, man?
61.
And what's waiting for you in Mariposa if you can get there?
Well, my uncle's house is there. I've been caretaking for the last 20 years, ever since my first wife died. I hope to have another one someday, but you never know.
Well, you are a cutie, you know.
Thank you very much. I don't know if I should take that from you as a kind gesture or not.
Or perhaps a come-on or some kind.
Yeah, right. You know,
got to watch out when you're on the road. So, any message for anybody that you want who'll be listening to this broadcast probably tomorrow morning?
Just to a lady I know by the name of Corinna. Corinna? Just to let her know that I'm still in Santa Cruz, haven't quite made it there yet. And if she's listening, find me.
On Pacific Avenue across from the Cinema 9 Theater?
Well, hopefully I won't be here tomorrow, but yeah, I'll be somewhere on this avenue.
And we've been talking with?
Wayne Carpentier.
Thank you, Wayne. You also, I might add, Wayne, have had experience with, unfortunately, exposure to Agent Orange?
Yes, sir. I'm not supposed to get any checks here until after I go in and get radiation. Then they'll see about how much I get. So I'm just kind of living hand to hand. But my uncle's been really nice. You know, he let me come out there and work as a caretaker and so forth.
How's the Vets Administration treating you?
Huh?
How are the Vets Administration treating you?
Well, you know, they treated us really shitty when we got back to Nam.
Right.
And I just haven't had too much to deal with them. And then I started to develop some problems. And I went into Palo Alto to find out exactly what was going on. And they came up and said that I got the onset of bone marrow disease from Agent Orange. They think it's about 20% has gone out of my body, but they're going to shoot some, put some needles in my legs, in my ankles, and they want to shoot radiation into them. I was a little nervous about that.
Before or after you go to Mariposa?
After I hopefully I get back from Mariposa, because I've got to tell my uncle about it, and he might take me up there. Last time I was supposed to go to Palo Alto, they had to send me all the way back to Salt Lake City, Utah, because of problems on my case. They didn't have no facilities to deal with me.
Did they fly or make you go by horseback?
No, they put me on a bus with armed guards and shackles.
In shackles?
In shackles.
You were a prisoner?
No, I'm just classified as extremely dangerous.
Well, you look pretty dangerous, I must say, in that gray cap. It's rather ominous, you know.
I keep in shape.
Well, I'm going to back off just in case you attack me for some reason.
No, I wouldn't attack you. I'm a mellow guy. Just when the pain gets a little bad.
You sound pretty mellow to me. Again, thanks for talking with us, and again, for the third time we've been talking with
you. All right, I thank you. And you have a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you, Wayne. We're talking with
Natalia Taylor.
Of October. Occupy Santa Cruz. Which occupied in October.
Absolutely.
November and sort of in December, but will you be there in January? That's the question.
I'll be there forever.
Really? You intend to return after... We weren't at the General Assemblies recently, I've noticed.
No, I have not.
There's been some talk about... It's been true. The General Assemblies have been smaller and smaller and colder every evening at 6, and of course they face the 7 a.m. p.m. curfew, but the county has leveled on the whole whole business. We don't want, you know, too many constitutional rights cluttering up the courthouse, you know that. So what are your plans for next year, and how are you going to manage to do both occupy and take care of children and do a job?
That's the question, is just to try to find balance. That's what I'm trying to address.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm a mom and a social worker.
Does that bring in enough money to pay the rent?
Yeah, and we're trying to start a small business right now, which is proving to be difficult, so...
What kind of business? Heroin business, perhaps? You seem a little reticent to talk about it. I thought, aha!
Right.
Perhaps a sex worker business? No, nothing like that.
No.
Corporate Bank of America subsidiary?
Probably not.
No. I'll leave it to the imagination of the listeners what business you're starting. But
thanks, Con.
Hey, thank you again. And any final thoughts for this old year?
It's going to happen. We're going to move forward, and there's nothing that's dying out, and anyone that thinks so, I feel like they're misled, and those of us that still feel hope and positivity, we'll meet again in 2012, and it'll be amazing.
I'm glad to hear it.
All over the place.
And she gives great hugs, folks. I want you to know that.
Cheers.
Thank you, Nan. We have that one-line man.
Whatever it is, I'm against it.
He's making a quick retreat, thank God. And we're also talking with...
Angela Flynn.
And Angela, you're nursing an ice cream cone of indeterminate flavor. What is that?
It's Verve coffee with chocolate praline.
Where did you buy it?
Oh, at the Penny ice cream stand up the street.
I've heard many a thing about the Penny ice cream stand. I think I purchased once, but they have no hot fudge. What is ice cream without hot fudge?
It's still pretty good, but I agree. Hot fudge all over this would be incredible. Yeah.
Now, you could go into Marini's, but then you have to buy Republican.
Well, not only that, but it's not organic.
It's not organic.
There's no even...
There are no organs in it?
Of,
you know, nothing of that sort?
No. You got to have pure organic.
It's got to be.
Do you need bovine growth hormones? No. I don't.
Well, I mean, the smart meters are all the rage, you know.
Smart meters are outrageous.
Indeed, that too. But Sheriff Wowak thinks they're just fine. He's powerless to help, even though the law says he's supposed to stop them from being installed.
Well, yes, it's kind of interesting. You have to wonder why we all feel so unempowered these days, and I think it's really a mind block. We actually have a lot of power. We are the 99% after all.
Indeed, and it's the 99% that's been cleared away from the courthouse, cleared away from San Lorenzo Park, and hopefully cleared away completely from Santa Cruz so that we don't have this riffraff cluttering up the streets and the public buildings.
Well, the real problem is that a lot of the 99% don't realize that they're part of the 99%, they identify with the 1%. And that's why we're in the bad situation we're in. If everyone were to realize they're part of the 99%, we would be the ones running the show.
Now, you've been doing some Occupy-ish type work.
Well, a little bit. I'm more a little focused on the wireless issue than the Occupy, just because if you scatter your forces too much, I feel, you know.
You've more successful in getting PG&E to take one little step back, then two little steps back. Finally, it's taking doing a two-three step, one step forward, three steps back. What's? I know we've read that they are agreeing to let people put in analog meters, the kind of meter that was in there prior to the smart meter, which doesn't have a transmitter or that kind of beep 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 stuff. But on the other hand, they're charging for it. What's the story?
Well, there isn't a decision made. That'll be happening by the CPUC sometime in the future. But the real thing here is that smart meters are supposed to be an opt-in program, not an opt-out program. The 2005 Federal Energy Act and also our local utility code, both of those say that we are supposed to be able to choose if we want meters that give us time variant pricing. There's nothing in either one of those acts that says people have to have this meter. So we need, as always, the laws enforced, and that's often the issue. Is that our law?
I've had a number of people, Josh Hart, Jeff Nordahl, other strong supporters and very articulate supporters about stopping smart meters. None of them has mentioned that particular act of Congress.
Well, it's kind of just coming to light now. You know, we're all on a learning curve here. Not many of us really want to know any of this stuff.
At the top of the curve here.
I'm riding the wave all the way.
Does this mean I get another hug?
Of course, and I better get going before my ice cream melts.
Don't push that ice cream in my face, even though I'm a little bit rude, you know, with brash in my request. We're talking with that sexy guy, Uncle Peter. Peter, what's the story from the last month? How have you faced the police, and how have they faced you? And what about this foolish Occupy Santa Cruz stuff that you've wisely avoided?
Well, face the police, like, generally everything's been mellow. There's been good Christmas music on the avenue.
Is there such a thing as good Christmas music?
Well, I suppose
they're about to invade Iran. They've got indefinite detention, and we have good Christmas music. Come.
No. I realize that if you're the Grinch, you might have trouble seeing.
You
the
dare
fact
to call me?
If you'll notice, there's good Christmas music in the background.
It's
Christmas Eve day, and it's pretty sweet out here on Pacific Avenue.
Oh yeah, you got.
Now, why aren't you adding to the general cacophony? I mean, good Christmas music.
I might be, but
you're threatening us. Is that the idea?
No. Right now, I'm deploying technology that will profoundly make the world a better place.
More saxophones, Brett?
Someday, perhaps the world's loudest saxophone that's internal combustion power, just because we need to define, if people are going to use crowd-control noise cannons, we need to reply in a musical way.
This, of course, is Saxy Peter, who I haven't heard or seen much on Pacific Avenue. Admittedly, I'm not down there as much as I used to be, but I'm wondering where he's gone. There was a rumor at one time last year that he had died, but that rumor was proven to be false.
It's fitting, and so we need to show that you can do so at sound pressure levels another 10 decibels higher. So in that sense, we need
sound powers.
We need to build the world's loudest musical instrument just to do
this. Is
just
part of your secret project?
It's a diabolical thing. So I confess, it's about diabolical scheming to build the world's
Jesus' birthday is coming up, and you're talking about Diablo. You understand this is somewhat sacrilegious.
Not entirely. Personally, I was thinking of him when I was contemplating this, because, occasionally he'd, like, tip over the money changer's tables and rouse some rabble.
Who's your eardrums? Would Jesus burst?
I suppose that on the day he was born, he didn't necessarily know that he was going to need to tip over the money changer's tables. That happened a little later when it became apparent how irksome their behavior was. So
nothing to do with saxophones and the police on Pacific Avenue. The original topic of the question. Do you have anything to say on that subject?
I think it was Christmas and we were talking about... So in any case, occasionally he would get rousted and tip over the money changers' tables. So that's why we celebrate his birthday.
Mythological to me. I was not there 2,000 years ago. And neither were you, sir. Allegation.
How do you know that?
That's my supposition.
Okay, well, it sure is.
It's not a suppository. Eh?
Okay.
All right, then. Thank you, Peter. Well, we have
And let's go and review a little bit of what's been happening since my Sunday show, which actually it's been kind of a heavy week. It is true that being accused of felonious conduct does put a burden on one, and I'm feeling burdened. But a couple things have been released. I got a letter from the mayor some days ago, I think it was Sunday, that detailed his history of community contacts. That is to say, people he'd met with. And I made a twofold request to him. I requested that he, as mayor, as I request of every mayor, release a list of his contacts with lobbyists, those he's met with on particular issues who are trying to influence him as mayor or as council member. And then secondly, that he also lists his upcoming public appearances so that if people want to attend events that he's going to appear at, they know where to go and when they're happening and so forth. All previous mayors have refused to do this. Lane committed himself to doing it, and he did release a list, which I then posted on Indie Bay, under the title Mayor Lane Releases History of Community Contacts. So that has been posted. I thanked Mayor Lane for doing that. I will be, as I mentioned before, meeting with him tomorrow to follow up on some questions that I've, as an activist with Occupy Santa Cruz and also as an activist with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, I have an interest in. I've been quite critical of Lane, both as vice mayor and as mayor, for his role in destroying the homeless campground. You might say, well, what does he have? It's just the police department, that's the city manager. It was done when Mayor Coonerty was mayor. And all these things are true. But it's also true that he didn't speak out against it. He took this position of negotiating with Occupy Santa Cruz, meeting with them every week. I was highly skeptical of this whole process, although some things, it is claimed, actually came out of those meetings. One was an opportunity to have a dialogue with the mayor. Another was, apparently, the city finally agreed to lift its ban on having a porta potty there because it began to look pretty stupid when they had 100 to 200 people living in the camp in the camp in the park, and they closed their bathrooms at night, and they wouldn't allow us to put in porta potties to serve people. That looked like, and then they wanted to claim, well, people are going pee pee and poo poo, and that's very bad, you know, that sort of thing. It looked a questionable kind of argument, as well as a public health hazard. And so we were able to put in two porta potties, and I guess a third over on the street, which were quickly run off once the camp was destroyed by the police department on an order by Danette Shoemaker, who's admittedly doesn't work under Don Lane, but, you know, he could have raised some issues himself about this. Said, look, it's still in the courts. There are no places for people to go, for these homeless folks to go. There's no shelter for them. We're in the middle of winter. If you have a specific legal problem or a law enforcement problem, and you know, those actually the crime seems to, in Oakland, for example, around Occupy Oakland, the crime dropped. That was a finding that I was reading online earlier today. I would say that probably the crime in the city dropped. I don't have figures, but if people are in one place, if they don't have to run around and sleep in different places illegally, they can all sleep in one place illegally and take care of each other, and it shouldn't be illegal, of course, to engage in survival camping, particularly when you have no alternatives. That seems to be a public benefit and something that Lane could have commented on. And I'm presumably, well, I'll be bringing that up tomorrow, though I feel like I'm kind of flogging a dead horse because I think it's been brought to his attention before and he kind of smiles and, you know, oh, that's not really my department and, you know, oh, well, you know, there are legal obstacles and there are city liabilities and he's got, you know, numerous excuses. Or let's put it this way, city officials in his position have numerous excuses, but I haven't heard him making positive statements about it, which, frankly, I expect to city officials who claim to have a great interest in homeless civil rights. Don knows this, and I'm sure he has is well prepared for any such criticism. We'll see what he has to say tomorrow. Also meeting with Catherine Byers, who you heard me kind of wincingly joking with Uncle Dennis, who again advises you to, by the way, write down the freakradio.org webstream, our browser bookmark it, so you know where it is, because it's no longer going to be accessible by a link from the Freak Radio from the Free Radio website, the Freak Radio website. So do that. But Catherine Byers is, of course, a council member who a kind of largely kind of abandoned any belief that there's much positive that can come out of lobbying or chatting with council members in terms of getting anything substantive done that might positively impact poor and homeless people or even renters. That my main function is to make it clear what the city isn't doing, needs to do, and hence, since it's not doing it and its representatives aren't, that the community needs to take action. And that's, of course, what Occupy Santa Cruz and Occupy groups throughout the country were actually involved in doing, and trying to form alternative centers of power and action, which, in essence, were saying, we are going to do this unless you do it, and get going. And that... it's still happening to some extent in Santa Cruz. I mean, there are still meetings of the General Assembly four times a week. There are still occasional marches. There are still plans around foreclosure activity to dramatize this reality. There's a solidarity with the students coming up on March 1st, when there's gonna, less than a week, or about a week, actually, when there's going to be a... general strike and a shutdown on campus. I got an email on that issue, actually, which I probably should read. Let's see if it's accessible. There's a group that meets about that issue, and they're planning on forming a tent university, which was done 6 or 7 years ago. Here's the statement from concerned students, faculty, and workers of UCSC, which was sent to me earlier today. A democratic assembly of UC Santa Cruz students, workers, and educators have decided on a strike to shut down our campus on Thursday, March 1st. The day's actions are not confined to California, but are part of an international day of action for public education. I think it's called Occupy Education. We invite the community to participate in the event scheduled for March 1st. The problems in California's education system affect everyone, not just current students. The K-12 students of today are the UC students of the future, and the price tag for a college education is increasing, while vital services are simultaneously cut. We're asking for support of the Santa Cruz community and hope you will join us in the activities planned over the course of the day. Everything possible is to ensure that the action will be safe for all participants, especially children, aside from emergency vehicles, faculty and family student housing, health services and psychological services. All other vehicles will be denied campus entry on that day. Sounds like a blockade. And using Uncle Dennis's tone, I might say, don't you know, aren't you aware that that's an illegal action? I mean, that you can't block the roads. And I guess the answer is that under some circumstances, the community needs to do that kind of thing. On that same day, we will put forward a tent university and an alternative vision of education to counter the agendas imposed by the UC regions and other corporate elites. This alternative free university will include outdoor classes, educational workshops, music, poetry, speeches, food, World Cafe discussion, whatever that may be, and a space to have conversations about ways forward. The tent university will be an open setting at the base of campus for students, teachers, and community members to peacefully teach and learn together. All interested in teaching can contact organizers about scheduling a space by emailing tentucsc@gmail.com. That's tent, T-E-N-T, U-C-S-C, @gmail.com. Or go to the strike website, march1strikeucsc.org. That's March and 1, numeral 1, strikeucsc.org. Donations for food and materials are greatly appreciated and can be made through the website. And this is going to be a stepping stone to a march on the Capitol, March 5th, to shut down the political nervous system of the 8th largest economy in the world. Students and teachers will travel to Sacramento to rally with more than 10,000 peers from other UCs, CSUs, community colleges, and K-12 schools. And probably that is also being mentioned on Indy Bay. Let's see if there's an actual calendar event for it. We got the phones are ringing off the hook. Maybe they'll give us the details. Hi, you are on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Actually, both of you are on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Who's
is that right? This is your roving reporter, Steve Place, reporting live and direct from the General Assembly at the Water Street Courthouse Steps.
Hold it. Now, who else? Who's the other person on the line?
Hey, no, this is DJ Metter Embryo. This is so cool that you got two at the same time, Robert.
Yes, indeed. Now, you're calling from Los Angeles, DJ
yes, I
Embryo.
Am.
And you, Steve, are calling from just down the road.
That's right. Occupy Santa Cruz. It's alive and well.
All right. Well, I know you're going to be going to an event later tonight, a Latino event of some kind.
Actually, I've delegated Paul Johnston to appear on my behalf, and I decided to come over here to the General Assembly and put in my 2 cents worth on a lot of our events coming up.
So. Is Occupy Santa Cruz dead? Is the General Assembly just about to... is it a rotten corpse, or is it still live and kicking? What's going on with it?
No, it's still live and kicking. We probably have 25 or 30 people out here planning events, got some direct actions going, so it's looking good.
Direct actions, does that mean vandalism and felony trespass?
No, I leave that to an ear-capable hand, my friend.
Oh, I love you so much. the sneers just keep on coming.
Now, who else on the line there?
So DJ Embryo, you have a comment from Los Angeles, or do you have a question for Steve Plaich, one of the legal eagles?
Well, you know, what it is that I didn't really hear the exchange that you and Uncle Dennis had exactly, but if it had something to do with, I don't know, it being some kind of controversial action going into that bank, or is that, or did he feel that it was wrong because it was illegal or something? Or?
Oh, Uncle Dennis and I have a sort of collegially bristly kind of relationship, which involves a lot of kidding and brutal bullying on Dennis's side and gentle nudging on my side, you know.
Okay. Yes, okay. And I didn't really hear the gist of your interchange, but I just think that I think it's really funny that with the extreme cases of murder and injustice and just sickness, we live in slavery, and people are worried about going into a bank or something. I just think it's really ridiculous. If John Brown were involved in the struggle, the bank would have been burned down days ago, and he would already moved on.
Mm.
Okay, everybody, so this is just so wimpy. It's, come on, everybody. It's nothing to debate about or even think that it's even that radical to take over a bank. It's a really good action, but the authorities are so incredibly lucky that their whole structure wasn't destroyed 2 days ago. Completely destroyed. Okay, so let's, come on, everybody. Let's get our tails out from between our legs and just get busy and not act like certain things are radical. They just aren't. They just aren't.
Steve, any comment on that from the General Assembly? You intend to bring that up as a resolution, possibly a bank bonfire coming down the pike?
Well, we hadn't thought to put that on the agenda as a proposal, but I'm sure it would be fodder for discussion. You know, it's always an interesting thing when you hear differences of opinion and differences of perspective. And I think we're all in solidarity and moving toward the same kinds of economic and social justice. So, all of us, some of us move in different directions, and that's what that bank occupation was all about.
I know. It wasn't even terrorism. Like in John Brown's case, he was killing fucking people. He was killing people to terrorize others to get them to stop doing slavery. He was aggressively a terrorist.
That's
that's what happened in our history. And, you know, and he's very much more popular with African Americans than he is with white folks. Interesting dynamic there, too. And it's just funny to me that they're not direct corollaries, but kind of, because we live under wage slavery. We are slaves. We live under a slavery system that has shifted, but has not really changed ever since the time of John Brown. So it seems to me like, why are people so scared of taking radical actions? It doesn't even make sense to me. What is that about? Is it just some general sort of timidity? And if it is, let's live this life, man. Let's stop stumbling around and being all wimped out. We only have one life to live. Let's get going. Let's do it, man. That's what's happening in Greece. Things are so fucked up that they're breaking shit up. They're in the streets. They're throwing Molotov cocktails. They're not, you know, just standing around waiting for something to happen. I'm not saying that's the only thing to do, but who would criticize the people in Greece for doing that when they don't even have a way out or a chance to do anything else, just like the situation is here?
Steve, what's your thoughts on that?
I would say that, you know, everybody has differing views on the level of action. You know, and I'm not going to disagree or even criticize anybody else's commitment and the ways in which they want to go about social change. You know, say, Occupy Santa Cruz has its way, the DJ has his way that he's advocating. You know, it's all solidarity, brother.
I'm not advocating a certain way. I'm advocating the discussion and the debate of the issues. I'm not John Brown. I'm not, you know, I haven't burned down anything today, but the fact is, do I respect the man? Of course. And is it a very legitimate issue? Has it been with at all? He's an American terrorist, everybody. By definition, that's exactly what he was trying to do. So where is the debate about terrorism, good or bad? This goes beyond like violence to nonviolence. Hello, everybody. We will be bad. little leave now. We're talking taking actions to save a whole planet or to change a system that is so degrading and abusive, murderous, et cetera, et cetera.
Matthew, the problem, one thing you should know, you're kind of breaking up. I don't know why. It's
whether it's your phone or...
Oop, sounds like you may have broken up there. Steve, are you still there? Hello? Hello? Oops, thinks I've lost both callers there. Whoops.
Call back, both of you, either of you, if you'd like. You know, my answer to that as to why there isn't a broader-ranging debate about more radical, militant, or even violent proposals is it's a complicated question. Some of it has to do with fear. People are, you know, when you're living in the middle of a system, making a long-distance call pseudo-anonymously from Los Angeles, not pseudo-anonymously, semi-anonymously, is different than being... a high-profile, well-known person in a community where, you know, you're already under indictment, falsely under indictment for felonies, which, as I think the caller rightly points out, aren't felonies at all, even if I had done them. Even if I'd done the worst thing that happened in that building, it wouldn't rise to the kinds of concerns and expenses that the authorities are putting the community through. But the reality also is, you know, in terms of real action, which some people believe that nonviolence of a massive and broad sort is what's needed to, is the only thing that American people will really understand and respect, and will actually, the only thing that can be successful as a tactic or a long-range strategy at this time. Others believe that a variety of tactics need to be used. That's a big debate in the Occupy movement around diversity of tactics. But I think people are, you know, they're naturally scared to propose alternatives that suggest, you know, burning down buildings, terrorizing people, and so forth. They're not my cup of tea for a number of reasons, I guess. I mean, I have one foot still. I live in this system pretty much, and so I'm not a revolutionary in that sense, and I've never really claimed to be. I have sympathy, as I think the callers has, for that. We have a caller. But I'm fundamentally a kind of an outspoken liberal, I think, on these issues. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. I'll just say basically one thing and go. I don't know if I'm going to start cracking up again, breaking up. But that all sounds good, and taking a nonviolent approach, that's wonderful. So then I would assume that all those people will not be voting for Republican or Democrat, or even are even slightly considering it. Why? Because they take a nonviolent approach, and they would never vote or put their support behind a warmonger. So in other words, if there's that many people that feel so strongly nonviolent, then we don't have to worry, because the Republicans and Democrats are not going to win elections, so we're going to have something better. But then, and then, if that's not the case, then there are people who are for state violence, but yet in their own lives, they want to be nonviolent. So, that, you know, in other words, want to go up against a violent system that they're supporting, but they want to confront nonviolently. That makes a huge amount of sense.
Hmm. Are you being sarcastic?
Well, I mean, it makes the least amount of sense. It makes no sense at all.
Right. That's right.
So what's the deal? You know what I mean? And I guess I'm saying that to you, probably preaching to the converted, because you're not probably considering voting for any of the criminals that are going to be put up there on the ballot. But the fact is, what is the deal with that? Are they violent or nonviolent?
Well, I think even a lot of people who are critical of those who occupied this bank, or critical of those who reported on it, or critical of those who... Those kinds of critics are critical of the state violence as well. People don't know what to do. I mean, they're afraid that they're afraid, and that sometimes with some justification, they're going to be slapped down, crushed, repressed, fired, ostracized, jailed.
I'm afraid of that too. I'm very afraid
we're
of that.
All afraid
I'm afraid of that,
that
when I go and put up flyers around the town, because it's like you take some flack for it, but it's a much better mood when I'm just going out there, I'm putting shit up, and I'm fuck it, man. And, you know, anybody gives me a hard time, they can go fuck themselves, man. I'm just going to put it up. You know, and that's when it's a much better headspace, and it's actually a positive headspace of doing a good thing out there and trying to get beyond the fear, because I feel a lot of that too.
I hear you. Yeah, I think that one of the reasons one, and you sound angry, as you should be, and I think one of the reasons people get angry is because they try to combat their fear with that, and that is an under, you know, that's, I think, a not inappropriate to do that. It's one gets angry when people take away your rights. You get angry. If you don't get angry, then you're in trouble. You're in even deeper trouble because you're censoring your natural reactions to what you should be responding to. And I think a lot of people do censor that because they realize they want to be able to bring home a paycheck, small and diminishing as it is. They want to keep being able to stay in the housing they're in without their landlord saying, oh, I saw you out there in that protest. I don't think I want you in my...
Okay. No, those are actually excellent points, and some of it for me is ethics, but some of it is what you just said. I've never had anything. I've never had any assets. I've been always extremely poor, always extremely struggling. So why would I identify with anybody having more than the other person? In fact, hunter-gatherer societies, all these huge divisions and these other types of distortions and deformations, it was impossible to happen because everybody had to work every day just to simply gather food and do everything. There could be no slavery. There could be no someone sitting in the White House, you know, while everybody else is working, you know, as a slave to them. That couldn't exist in that type of society. Even if there was a, quote, chief, the chief was out there gathering food just like everybody else.
You know, I don't know how much we know about those societies. I mean, I know we speculate about that, and I know that there are some, we have some knowledge of Native American societies or First Nations.
There still are
hunter-gatherer
societies today. It's not speculation at all, actually. The archaeological aspects are some speculation, but actually more and more is known. But as well, there are hunter-gatherer societies today who have been pushed onto marginal non-agricultural lands that can be studied today. Exactly true. In fact, the Kalahari Bush... very much been studied. Their health better. They have at least as much free time as agricultural people. Like a lot of the ways we've basically done things in the modern choices that were actually made really, really long ago, pretty much are pretty faulty, wrong. And now we have the choices to make. We have the ability to make different choices.
Yeah, but what about sushi and DVDs, man? I mean, how can we? You know, we can't. We don't want to lose those benefits, do we?
Well, it's sushi, I would certainly not mind, but I totally see what you're saying, and we can't go backwards. We can't all, it's not going to become, or certainly instantaneous, that we're all going to become hunter-gatherers again. I think it's more about choosing where we want to go from this modern place we are, and you know, confronting the problems with an open mind, looking at maybe mistakes of the past, and seeing how we can create something new and better now. But to kind of ignore that basically the facts show that agriculture was a pretty negative step to take, even among native cultures here, like let's say in the Great Plains, the health and various things went totally downhill when they stopped being hunter-gatherers, and the archaeological evidence is in. It totally shows it. Jared Diamond has written books about the subject. It's fact. You know what I mean? Hunter-gathering is basically a better way than any other modern thing that we've done.
This is another aspect of that.
It completely overturned everything about our society
This is another subject, but I've read similar stuff, and I'm, you know, it's provocative. I want to thank you for calling in, though.
Yeah, thanks so much for your show.
Sure, man. Bye bye. Call in lines are open, 427-3772. I'm going to try to reach Steve Plaich for some of his updates if he has any. Admittedly, we don't have any terrorism updates at the time, but. Let's see what we got here.
Hello.
Steve Plaich. Hello.
Hello.
Looks like I may have the wrong number here. Sorry about that. Let's try again. One more time here.
Steve Plaich?
Steve Plaich, this is... I was going to make a joke and say this is terrorism radio, but, you know, I mean, I'm really kind of torn because I think the kinds of issues that the caller raised are real ones, and they're ones that are particularly pertinent, you know, but you can't really have, I think... It's hard to have conversations about these. It's hard for me to discuss these issues in a way. Frankly, I feel somewhat intimidated talking about that kind of stuff. What do you think, Steve? Or is this the kind
well,
of?
Well,
I think it was interesting. I appreciate the man's passion. I'm familiar with my country's history, and I appreciate the role of the revolutionary, the socio-political revolutionary particularly. But on the one hand, this fellow is advocating, oh, let's not be timid, you know, let's burn something down. And I said, well, if that's an action, and he said, well, no, that's what John Brown would do. So, you know, I'm saying that if you want to advocate something, get out in front of it, you know, and don't hide behind somebody that's been dead for 150 years.
I think he's saying that he was actually, I think, criticizing the idea that this bank occupation is some kind of major crime that people should be really concerned about. And I've done my best to kind of, you know, I hate spending so much time talking about it. It just seems like
it's just a different perspective. You're talking about, you know, it's not personal injury, it's property injury.
I mean, he points...
So, you know, you're elevating a property interest over a personal interest, and the personal interest being, you know, the move to for social and economic justice. So, yeah.
I mean,
so,
it's all...
a different opinion.
I mean, you can also look at, you know, the fact that the labor movement and strikes were not won peacefully frequently, that they involved a lot of solidarity and often a lot of violence.
And again, I'm familiar with my country's history in that respect.
Right, and I'm not advocating that we come out, I'm not saying we should come out in front and start doing that, but it's important to, I think, to acknowledge that and to take it into account. And the difficult thing is to putting it into the current situation, you know, and I don't know if it's a subject. I feel something like we're in the middle of a censored conversation because I feel like I'm almost censoring myself as I talk about it. But I will continue to censor myself, I guess, until I stop doing it. And ask you any events coming up in the next week or that have happened in the last week. I know yesterday you had a I would call it a face-off. You had a forum with Sergeant Eric Seeley at the Don Lane. Yeah,
homelessness and the law. The level of something of a debate about the law and homelessness and homeless issues. So it was interesting. We just finished our General Assembly, which was directed by Santa Cruz, you know, and that was mostly housekeeping. We have an event coming up on Saturday. It's a stop foreclosure, kind of a potluck and hoedown out at Hibbard Street, which Hibbard runs off of Delaware between Alma and Swift, I think. Alma and Fair.
Do you know what time it is?
What's it's between 12 and 6.
And what's the exact address?
I don't know what it is. He's on Hibbard Street. You can look it up. If you go to the Transition Santa Cruz website, it's also on there because they are helping us promote it. So you can get all the information you need.
Which website? I'm sorry, which website again?
Transition Santa Cruz.
Transition Santa Cruz, okay.
Transition Santa Cruz, be very careful. Transition Santa Cruz. And then, of course, we're having the Occupy the Food Supply all day at the clock tower, the 27th Monday. Then we're having a candlelight vigil and march in solidarity with International Occupy. And that'll start at the Water Street Courthouse steps at about 6 o'clock on Monday evening and march over to City Hall for a candlelight vigil. They're actively planning, of course, we agreed at the GA tonight to loan 3 of our tables to the UCSC Tent City March 1st, so I'll be going up there with the tables, and I think Ed, perhaps, maybe even Paul, if we can recruit him. And I'm going to be doing an ACLU Know Your Rights tabling. Of course, Casey Living Good will be doing a Huff tabling. And so that's all happening on March 1st, which is a week from tomorrow.
Go ahead.
Yeah. That's kind of what's going on.
You've also been involved with the ACLU as a board member. I know I've been constantly on your tail to get, you know, I don't think you can get anything done with the ACLU, as I've told you for many times. But what the ACLU and other cities is doing is broadly attacking laws that criminalize the homeless, whereas in Santa Cruz we can't even get a resolution opposing them. But you apparently at least have been trying to frame a resolution. You had a board meeting recently to oppose the recent prosecutions of such wonderful do-gooders as myself and the other Santa Cruz 11.
Yeah, and Bob LaMonica, as you know, our friend and critic of the ACLU, but certainly in many ways well-intentioned and well-reasoned criticism of the lack of activity of our local ACLU over time. But we are now attempting, I think, to become more active. You know, I don't know there's much mea culpa we can do about things that have been taken in the past, but we're certainly moving toward taking some more principled stands in the present and the future. So, you know, those are the issues that are topical today. You know, the 75 River Street prosecutions, the homeless issues in town, you know, how the homeless are treated in town, and particularly last night when we were talking about the relationship between the homeless and law, you know, camping ban, downtown ordinances, you know, all sorts of things that impact the quality of life. And
yeah, well, Steve, let me play, cold shower reality here on you. I mean, ACLU's been around on this issue, you know, for decades, of course, and in Santa Cruz has declined to do anything. More recently.
And I'll say to you, without interrupting, which I will.
You are interrupting. Let me finish. You've been with them for a year now.
And I have not been with them for a year.
Oh, really? Well, I thought you were with them in May when I visited. That's almost a year, and you were on the board at that point, I believe.
Well,
so let's call it 9 months. And that the issue of the criminalization of the homeless, not generally, but very, very specifically in terms of very particular laws and practices by the police, by the courts, by the city, have been brought repeatedly to the attention of this board, and they have declined to do anything other than, I believe you made a resolution, you were going to investigate, should dogs be allowed to be with homeless people when they're panhandling on Pacific Avenue. I got to tell you, this shows me quite clearly, in spite of all the rhetoric you just rolled at me, that the ACLU is doing absolutely nothing on this issue and that we need to acknowledge that.
And we could agree to disagree because we've had this conversation before, and we're really boring your listeners. And
I don't know. I don't feel bored. I don't think listeners are bored.
Substantive discussions, or we'll just move on to no discussion.
Well, what I'm saying is that you know, you. I guess
we've had this conversation before.
I don't want to hear that. That's what the media uses to roll over issues. Oh, this is an old issue. We don't have to talk about it.
Robert, you have the same rant every day. Sound like Bob.
It's not a rant. No, I'm talking about what actually happened recently at your board meeting 2 or 3 days ago, which was, you know, you had a board meeting. There's another opportunity to do anything on any one of these specific issues, which is current. It is not 10 years old or 20 years old, and Bob often does get lost in the past. It is right now. And the only thing that's happened, as far as I know, is you've told me you're working on a resolution that you may pass denouncing the current prosecutions. Is that correct?
We're working on it, yes.
Well, I'm glad you're working on it. Keep it up. I got an incoming call, and I want to thank you for the updates.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. And we have another caller. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio. Hello.
Hey, Robert. How come this is getting all set down? How come you were feeling torn and sense of yourself? This was Free Radio, man. You guys should just blast out. Have your debate. What is this? What's all this censorship stuff? And, like, all I was mentioning was about John Brown was getting a debate going. Getting a debate going. Hello? That's not my one opinion. I have fucking 28,000 opinions about it. The whole point is, why can't we talk about these things?
Well, we can. But, you know, what I'm talking about is probably more limited. And it's, you know, I mean, if you want to discuss the merits, for example, of, I don't know, John Brown terrorism in Santa Cruz, that could be done. Or even the merits
of... Or the ACLU. That's a perfect example of an organization that many days ago should have basically
many
been
years
trying
ago,
to get the
actually.
President put in jail. When are they going to do it? Let's get busy.
Right. Well, they're not going to do it. See, that's the answer.
It's called seditious and conspiracy. It's actually a law on the books.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that there's some issues. I raise the issue when it comes up. I try not to belabor the issue, our last caller said he felt he'd heard this rant before. Yeah, but in a certain sense, I come up with, it's a reality contact when Steve gives us a lot of fluff about what the ACLU may or may not be doing and all these issues and how we're working on this. He's been giving me this working on this shit for the last year, and frankly, it ain't happening. And, you know, if it ever does happen, I'll say right on. But until it does, I'll be extremely skeptical. When with respect to you and this idea of, you know, and I agree with you that this whole, liberal cringing at the idea of people taking over a building, and frankly, even a building that got somewhat vandalized, not as extensively as has been claimed in the media, but, you know, there was some graffiti done, I'm told, and I believe.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't think that's an effective strategy, particularly. I don't think it's an effective tactic and all that. But I think you pointed out, and others have pointed out, that there are, frankly, far worse things around to be focusing on. It's certainly it's relevant to condemn it. And I think some people condemn it because they feel, and not without justification, that it tends to tar the entire movement in the eyes of those...
Okay, they can feel that.
Yeah.
I couldn't disagree more. It's not a tarring.
Yeah.
Destroying, the complete destroying of that criminal fucking building, banking, not only is a criminal activity, it's not a job.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's completely wasting people's time. It's doing a lot of damage to people. Burning down and making so that building never existed would be a positive.
Uh-huh.
So what is this shit about anything else than that? And there's all these opinions that are totally valid. I don't want to put down anybody else's opinion, but to even fret about vandalism, burning, completely destroying that building and having the community take it over and do something positive with that space would be a positive. The crime is the way things are currently. The crime is the Santa Cruz city government. The crime is the existence of banks. And it seems like until people start acknowledging these basic things, these aren't radical, everybody. These are basic truths. I'll give you a perfect example. In like 1985, all the environmental facts that we know now were some fringe, radical, bizarre, earth-firster thing that nobody wanted to listen to. And that, it's just true. And now it's just become the reality that's in front of them. And I would submit that even the debate about John Brown and things like that, it's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing. We should have already been way past that a really long time ago. And as you saw with Steve Plaish, and I don't mean to attack him in any way, but you saw an example of a societal hesitancy to even talk about the subject. And you've seen that in the Occupy movement. People saying, oh, diversity of tactics, that's a code word for violence. Huh? Why not say diversity of tactics is a code word for nonviolence? That is so biased and fucked up kind of thinking that it's intellectually flaccid.
Well, I think there's a difference between talking about diversity of tactics and talking about burning down banks. I really do.
What is wrong with completely destroying symbols of something that is so criminal?
I'm saying...
I'm not saying I'm going to do that. I'm simply saying, why can't we debate
I'm saying that those are two... Those really are two significantly different concepts. I'm not saying there's something necessarily wrong with it in the ultimate sense. You know,
okay.
I mean, you know, but I'm saying that it is a different conversation to have. It's also, frankly, in the eyes of many, a much more dangerous conversation to have if you are actually doing more than engaging in theoretical discussion. If you're actually talking about it, that is a link in a felony activity. And if people want to do that and then somebody else goes and burns down the bank or you are in some way what you're saying is linked to it,
exactly.
There may be felonious responsibility imputed to you, rightly or wrongly. That's what's happening to 11 of us here who had no interest
that.
In any
it
kind of vandalism.
So
therefore, that is the reason I think that there is this. You ask, why this self-censorship? And the answer is, that's the reason. If you want to know the reason.
Interesting that, and it's, no, and I'm not saying that is wrong. That totally makes sense. I mean, it's not wrong as just a response for your own protection. But as I know you can see, that is where the police state starts to sink its claws further and further in and to limit people's freedom through that fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've always been very courageous at these activities, and we need to keep doing that because we live in Syria. You know, and it just hasn't got that bad yet, of course. But all these nations, these governments around the world have the same fallacies, and they're going to do the same things to people.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that, and I really don't know, honest, I don't know what the proper tactics are. You hear people talking about Syria, obviously an extreme, extreme case, and making really good cases on both sides for violence or nonviolence. And I truly am saying, let's have a vigorous debate about it, finally.
Well,
and I thought it was interesting. Go ahead.
You see, it's all theoretical. Unless people are out there engaging in direct action to get solidarity with other people, to even press for basic issues like rent control or renter protection,
yep.
or the right to legally sleep not anywhere and everywhere but somewhere. Unless there's a critical mass of people that are doing this, then those who say, let's burn down the bank as a way because it's a bad institution and look at all the crimes it's done. If a person alone is asserting this against a massive legal structure, I guess in the most abstract sense, you know, the violence against property pales in comparison with the murderous violence against human beings that is happening elsewhere in the world. This has been the point of I would call them radicals and revolutionaries, but I think it's also just ordinary common sense when you look at what's going on around the world. Unequal property relations
are violence, and this has often been pointed out.
But, you know,
so
I don't
the true
wanna,
violence
I spend
is
my time
that
talking theory on this show. If somebody comes in with specific, with you know, I'm more interested in what people are doing in this community in terms of standing up in reality, as they did tonight in a brief protest for Bradley Manning, as some of us do pretty regularly, and in the very limited organizing activity we do. Than
yeah.
I am in, you know, I guess people,
I think both are needed, though. We obviously have to have action, but there's totally like a philosophical and intellectual poverty that's happening. 48,000 debates needed to happen about, you know, 100 years ago, basically, you know, and people are just not wanting to talk about it for some, I can't imagine what idiotic reason. But you're right, we can't around, it's not about just sitting around talking, it has to do with actions. And I think the Occupy thing, that's totally not dead, you know? I mean,
is there an Occupy? In Los Angeles, where you are?
There is, and I think it suffers from the same problem that the others do, is that you know, there isn't a space exactly to meet. But, I mean, it's happening. It's happening in so many places. Like, it's happening in Ottawa. It's happening in New York. It's happening all over the place. And it's just, yes, it has been a setback, the police reaction, but it's not going
to
stifle it.
You know, I need to talk about specific facts, and so I'm going to leave this conversation, even though
absolutely,
I...
Absolutely, bro.
And you
okay, I mean, I always have, you know, I can give you reports about Occupy Auto, about a bunch of shit, but I'll totally let you go. I want to let you go on with your show, but I'm happy to give you, you know, specifics and not get philosophical, because I know you always want the local focus. I understand that. I do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, and I'd love you. You're welcome, by the way, to, you know, send in a stuff that we can play on free radio that is a report on these different things if you think you want to do it. So.
You know, it just may happen. And I'm actually moving to Fresno, and there's really, like, in just a couple days, and there's so much going on there, you know, with Occupy and various things. So I just might do that.
Okay. I think that would be helpful. Fresno is a center of activism recently, and of course they were successful in a lawsuit that's now being overturned by city action that initially upheld the rights of homeless people in a somewhat limited way, but did kick down $2.8 million or squeeze that from the city. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Let's turn to some more, perhaps, tepid, but, well, there's a guy out there in the cold. I guess he's going into his seventh night now. That's Anthony, who is from Sacramento, but has been doing a fairly lone vigil for much of the night, every night, in an attempt to encourage others to reoccupy public space in front of the county courthouse on Ocean Street, which has been criminalized by the county in a so far successful attempt, at least, to drive away the visible Occupy Santa Cruz encampment, as well as the people with protest signs that weren't in camping have been driven away for most of the day and most of the night by essentially the threat of prosecution and the threat of violence against them, or at least force against them if they return. Let's hear some interviews.
Here at the courthouse, 20 to 4. It's February 18th, Friday. It's getting a little chilly, but it's going to be darn cold tonight. I'm talking with
Anthony.
And standing by is a silent observer. And you've got a chair sitting up there right on the first landing where the steps move up to the generally closed entrance of the courthouse. I see you have a legalized sleep sign, a book. Somebody drew a chalk heart on the sidewalk. And there's some signs up around the courthouse, as well as the inevitable orange mesh fence, making sure that nobody walks on the grass.
And I should say this interview is from last Saturday, and I believe on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, Anthony came into the studio and was actually my co-host for quite a time, or at least my guest for that period of time. So this predates that by a day, but I believe there are also some subsequent interviews, and it also, I think, is helpful in giving you a sort of an on-the-spot sense of, with the cars rumbling by and so forth.
Excuse me, I have too much coffee here. How long have you been here now?
Going on 24 hours.
And have you been here pretty continuously? I know last night you were here with two other companions.
Yes, and they left in the middle of the night. It was the elements were just a bit rough for them, which, hey, man, not everybody's built for what someone else is, and I'm just glad I am.
And what about support from Occupy Santa Cruz, the people here? If anybody, have they brought you gold? Have they brought you silk? Have they brought you bananas? What have they brought?
Well, we have had several donations throughout the day. You know, it is a... We take donations on any giving basis for the fact that we do need supplies. Toilet paper, food, the works. Our next goal is to reestablish food service.
Now, our being you, yourself, and you?
Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz. Now, how many people came here today to provide you with... I mean, how many people were generally occupying today? Was it just you all through the day alone?
No, we actually had a couple other people. I don't know if their names want to be mentioned. We have had a couple that have come throughout the day. Somebody brought me coffee this morning. Oh, that was such a nice treat. Oh, hot coffee.
You intend to, should we say, be here another night?
I
detected a slight pause there. Is that, I mean, you're weakening in your resolution? Anthony?
Oh, absolutely not. That is a... I had to think about the future, and the future's always worth thinking about.
So, any interesting encounters with the police, sheriffs, or private security?
None since last night, and we discussed about the sheriff. He simply just asked us to move out of the park, and that was it. I mean, we have not had
by the park, you mean this piece of concrete entranceway to the courthouse?
Entranceway to the courthouse that serves as no entrance anyway.
Right, because the doors are always shut except for emergency purposes.
Yeah, they say no entry.
Point being that there's no park there. It is a cement area, which is a public assembly area, and is being intentionally closed to block public assembly. That's the area that's in front of the courthouse as you drive by on Water Street.
Anything you want to put out there to all your many fans who are flocking to join you?
Come by, spend some time, donate. We have a teach-in every night at 10 p.m. It's a corporate law teach-in. To fight the corporations, we have to understand the corporations. We will be here.
And if you want to reach you online, they can go to
SpunkyMan1985@yahoo.com.
Thank you, Anthony.
You're very welcome.
All right. Casey Livingood, you are an Occupy activist. Is anything going on you wish to bring to the attention of the Santa Cruz community?
We are having an Occupy Our Food Supply event on February 27th, Monday. Meeting at noon at the clock tower. There's the strike on campus, at the base of campus, UCSC, on March 1st. And then we're heading to the Capitol on March 5th. Free bus ride there and back if you decide.
Veterans for Peace and Aces.
Free meals, accommodations, sexual services.
CC.
CC meaning yes, yes?
Yeah.
Are you going to be providing the services?
No, Refund California.
I see. Well, that's interesting. So, I know you were at the Gary Johnson demurrer hearing today. I actually was there as well for part of the hearing. I understand Gary was...
This is actually Friday, not Saturday of last week.
He had his attempt to have the 647E lodging charge dismissed as defective, thrown out. How would you describe what went down?
Unjust.
How so?
Mr. Fry tried to argue on four different accounts, First Amendment, Ninth Amendment, I think due process and something else, I forgot. But
Gary, of course, is accused of the crime of sleeping on a bench outside the courthouse at night with a sign that said sleeping is a crime.
Yeah, and so since it was a protest, it's...
The sign said sleeping is not a crime. And actually, he had a variety of signs.
Open for time, place, and manner restrictions, of course, which are at the discretion of the judge, perhaps.
Actually, they're not at the discretion of the judge. They're supposed to be reasonable. I think that was the key word in the time, place, and manner restrictions. And, of course, I guess the restrictions they have at the courthouse are 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. is the closing hours for all the court property. This is their way of turning this area into a regulated zone, which really was a defect in their indictments last year when they did indict, actually year before last, when they indicted Peace Camp 2010 activists for sleeping under the same law, 647E, that they went after Gary and after the Occupy Santa Cruz people.
Yeah.
In other words, what's being done now, instead of just walking up to people and saying, you can't be here because you're occupying, you're lodging in the area under this Penal Code 647E, now they can say, we'll see, the area is closed to the public by these signs, and therefore you're trespassing, and they say, well, though the trespass law says there are exceptions for people who are engaged in First Amendment activity, so they kind of set aside that trespass, and they said instead, well, you're lodging here, and it's a reasonable regulation of time, place, and manner, because you could sleep if you were here during the day. Although, in fact, people like Christopher Doyen, Commander X, as he's known, received a ticket for sleeping during the day under 647E by the same Sheriff Wowak's department that is continuing to arrest people, at least Gary Johnson, who is in jail now in Watsonville on $5,000 bail, and continues to be there. He goes to trial, I believe, March 19th. Regarding the upcoming activities in the next few days, which were mentioned by Steve Plage briefly, I'm going to mention them again. There's a foreclosure teach-in, tour, and chow-down on Saturday, day after tomorrow, February 25th, noon at 127 Hebert Street. 127 Hebert Street. That's at noon, Saturday, February 25th. I put this up in a flyer online, which I've also tried to distribute, flyer called Occupy the Courts, Arrest the Real Criminals, Free the Santa Cruz 11. But it also has a whole listing of ongoing events. Then there's another event happening on the 27th, mentioned by Steve Plage, called Occupy the Food Supply. And I believe I actually have a flyer on that, which I've also posted. You can get all these flyers are accessible on Santa Cruz Indie Media if you want to go to www.indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And the flyer there is, I'm looking it up. It's Occupy shuts down Wells Fargo banksters crime scene. That happened a week ago. Conspiracy to commit journalism. Conspire against the crackdown. It's mainly, it announces the upcoming arraignments of Gabriella and Brent Adams. Gabriella Ripley Phipps and Brent Adams, who will be going to court at 8 a.m. on Tuesday. But there's also another series of events. Again, the Occupy the Food Supply, February 27th. That's going to be on Monday, next Monday, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, then there's the University March and Occupation, the mass strike on March 1st that's happening. I also give a report about the pre-trial, the arraignment that I went to. And I guess I don't think we have too much time left to talk about it. Let me go back to Gary Johnson's demur hearing. Gary is in jail, as I mentioned before, on this sleeping, it's not even the sleeping ban, it's a worse law than the sleeping ban that the county is using, a state penal code that subjects him to a $1,000 fine and 6 months in jail for each count. I think he has three or four counts of sleeping because he sleeps every night there. And it's clearly First Amendment activity. He's trying to protest the law, and they are punishing him for it by arresting him, holding him in jail on $5,000 bail without any meaningful basis at all other than just a sheer crackdown. They're nervous about the homeless people gathering. They're nervous about Occupy Santa Cruz protesters gathering. And so they feel it's okay to suspend the First Amendment to eliminate that. This, of course, is outrageous. Anyway, this hearing is the second hearing before the same judge on the same issue, which came up a year ago, which is 647E, the penal code that criminalizes lodging, constitutional? And there was quite a long discussion on Friday about this, and I guess we had Becky Johnson talking about this issue on Sunday when she was calling in a lengthy call. And so for those who are interested, you can check that out. What I've learned since then, actually I learned it today when I went down to the Bradley Manning rally, the Free Bradley Manning rally in front of the courthouse, was I ran into Susan, I think her name is Susan Wirth. And she was a woman who was in the audience on Friday watching the Gary Johnson activity. And she said what happened was I looked around and bailiffs were demanding she leave. And she wanted to stay. And she said, I have a right to be here. And the judge then gaveled for a recess and the bailiffs thrust her out of the court. She came back twice trying to see and be a part of the audience to observe the judge's crackdown on Gary Johnson, refusal to give him bail, refusal to declare the law unconstitutional, insisting on going ahead with this charade of a sleeping ban trial against a homeless person who has no options outside anyway. But the judge has to do this to maintain, to powder the face, the crooked nose of the law here, and the crooked nose of the courts and the sheriffs, just as Chief Vogel, I guess, felt he had to crack down on the campground for the same reason. At least that's my maybe cynical, maybe oversimplified, maybe prejudiced view of what went down. She apparently blew him a kiss. She blew Gary Johnson a kiss. He came into the court in shackles on his legs and on his hands, looking apparently, according to some, although I didn't really notice much difference, thinner and more wan than before from a month and a half in jail. And for that activity, she says, she was excluded from the court by force and then twice excluded again with by armed men with guns and tasers and so forth. They didn't pull their guns. No, they didn't pull their tasers. But they were there, ready to use. And it was the incarnation of the police state when this kind of thing happens. There is a rule that you're not supposed to make any contact with the prisoners. But the judge didn't make any objection, didn't direct her not to blow a kiss at the prisoner. The bailiff, on his own initiative, and there were two or three of them were in the court in this particular circumstance, as they often put more police officers in city council when people of a lower economic class show up, because I guess, you know, we're more dangerous. The judge gave no direction that she was to be removed from the court. But the bailiffs acted on their own initiative, again showing the police state in action. It is the police, the deputies, who are kind of taking the initiative here. And the judge, to his shame, sat back and did nothing while this member of the public was excluded, terrorized, threatened. She was terrified. She was crying as the deputies surrounded her. She just wanted to watch the proceedings. Yes, she blew him a kiss. She said that's what she did. I didn't see any of it. Maybe she didn't. Maybe it was an evil threat at the judge. But the procedure has grown worse, for sure. I was excluded from court ...20 years ago by a bailiff named James Thurber. He was actually the nephew, I believe, of the writer. James Thurber was a writer I really like. But this bailiff is a very kind of... he took his control powers and responsibilities a little too seriously and a little too personally. And he tried to have me arrested for contempt of court. The judge made no such ruling, and they dropped all these charges, because the judge was ready to testify in a proceeding that he had made no such attempt, that this was individual initiative by the bailiff. Times have changed now, where I guess you might, this is Judge Stevens' court years ago, but here in this court, Judge Gallagher has nothing to say when an older woman, and Susan's I guess in her 50s or so, diminutive woman, short woman, is terrified, terrorized, and evicted from court for blowing a kiss to a defendant. And then excluded even more militantly and forcefully by armed deputies when she tries to come back. And, of course, the whole content of this demurrer hearing had the judge arguing like a district attorney, like a prosecutor, against the arguments of Ed Fry, the attorney for Gary Johnson, that sleep is not a crime and that the law itself is very vague and cannot really be constitutionally understood to specify conduct that an ordinary person could understand. The judge's response is, well, the policeman told him, or the deputy told him. But it's not the deputy that has to speak, it's the law that has to speak. And if the law is unclear, if a deputy comes up and says, this is what the law means, no, it's not what the deputy says the law means, it's what the law says the law means. The law itself has to be clear and have clear standards, or you won't know what you're doing, and you're simply in the hands of the whim of a deputy. And deputies tend, and police agencies generally, tend to err on the side of control. I hear a knock at the door, and I think that's my old antagonist, Uncle Dennis, arriving. And so I'm going to put on some music. I want to thank you for being a part of this particular edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And I'll be back on Sunday with another version, assuming I'm still around, and you're still around, and we'll do it then. Thanks for being with me. If you want to reach me off air, it's 423-4833.
Boy, a lot of emotion there in that tune. Yeah, who is this, Robert?
That's somebody from the streets.
TFY.
I don't know what that stands for.
It's got a picture of Yoda on the CD. Very, very interesting music. Interesting harmonies there. Anyway, I think there was another one. Yeah. Is this yours, too?
I don't think so.
Kudzi Ergunner, Sufi music. That sounds like Schmechtel's.